Letters.
On museum collections, carbon pricing, AI and music, British immigrants, and how to describe X.
A fight at the museum.
From Dr. David Grimaldi, Curator, Division of Invertebrate Zoology, American Museum of Natural History, New York. Article What's in Store, March 9th, which described the vast collections held by many museums as a hoarding problem, was amusing but also a mixed bag of facts. Unlike some art museums, natural history museums don't sell specimens, not even herrings, which are pickled in something no one should ingest. The article implied that natural history collections are mausoleums, when in fact the specimens from any one big museum are being studied by hundreds of scientists around the world every year. They are a profoundly dynamic source of original discovery, especially in the Natural History Museum in London. If anything, natural history museums aren't exploring and surveying the world enough. We know there are hundreds of thousands of new species out there, maybe millions, based on what we find in museums. What are they? Where are they? What will happen to them? Without museums, we will never know. In that respect, you pointed to a critical problem. The staff who look after collections have become skeletal in number.
Carbon pricing.
From Mark Moody Stewart, former chairman of Shell, Hassocks, Sussex. I was surprised by the lack of any analysis of economic instruments to price carbon dioxide emissions in your excellent special report on the oil industry, article March 16th. Many economists regard such carbon pricing mechanisms as critical to achieving climate goals. European companies such as Shell have promoted these tools since around 2000. Indeed, at a meeting convened in the Vatican in 2019, at which I was present, the chief executives of all the big American and European oil companies, together with important investors, signed a declaration calling for governments to establish reliable and economically meaningful carbon pricing regimes, whether based on tax, trading mechanisms, or other market-based measures, at a level that incentivizes business practices, consumer behavior, research, and investment to significantly advance the energy transition while minimizing the costs to vulnerable communities and supporting economic growth. Although carbon pricing is spreading around the world, it would be interesting to see an analysis of its successes and failures, explaining why this important economic tool has not been more enthusiastically embraced. Is it suspicion of the support by industry, reluctance of state-owned companies, focus on supply-side restrictions by environmental groups, or fear of a consumer backlash? I look forward to an article in The Economist on this issue. We need as many tools as possible to accelerate the energy transition.
My guitar gently weeps.
From Bill Rosenblatt, Adjunct Professor of Music and Performing Arts Professions, New York University. What's missing from every discussion about generative artificial intelligence and music is the question of who's going to listen to any of it. Article Algorithm and Blues, March 23rd. AI does indeed make it easier for amateurs and professionals alike to generate more and more recorded music. Just as four-track cassette did in the 1980s, digital audio workstations did in the 1990s, and so on. There is already an enormous glut of recorded music. According to Luminate, a music data firm, 184 million tracks are available on streaming services, of which 43% had 10 or fewer streams last year, and 25% had none at all. Generative AI will only accelerate this pace. Meanwhile, actual demand for recorded music is barely growing. No one in the music industry wants to talk about this because businesses want to maintain the illusion that anyone can be the next Taylor Swift or Beyoncé. But this phenomenon will surely disrupt the industry as profoundly as all the other ways your article suggests.
What it means to be British.
From Mark Keller, London. As an immigrant, I couldn't agree more with your positive assessment of immigration in Britain. Article, Britain's Superpower, March 23rd. An underappreciated part of British assimilation is the use of the term British. It is a national term, unique in Europe, that connotes a national identity separate from an ethnicity. So although many immigrants probably never feel they can comfortably call themselves French, German or Italian, or indeed English or Welsh, we can always feel a sense of belonging through Britishness.
From Arndt Leininger, Assistant Professor for Political Science Research Methods, Chemnitz University of Technology, Chemnitz, Germany. Berlin seemed woefully provincial to me after I moved to London to study for a master's degree in 2011. In London, I rented from a British Indian family, opened my bank account with a clerk who, judging by his name, came from a Muslim family, and at university, many of the teaching staff and students I came into contact with were from other countries, or their families once were. Unthinkable in Germany, and not just back then. I agree with your assessment that Germany has a lot to learn from Britain about integrating immigrants. Perhaps in return we could teach Britain a thing or two about proportional representation or a non-hereditary upper house of Parliament.
X Factor, the final.
From James Tate, Henley-on-Thames, Oxfordshire. A reader's plea that The Economist stops using the phrase formerly known as Twitter is timely and welcome. Article, Letters, March 16th. You only recently repeated George Orwell's sage advice that if you can cut a word out, always cut it out. Article, Shock Horror, The Economist has updated its guide to good writing, January 25th. Since Twitter's name change came into effect, there have been 1,575,910 uses of the phrase formerly known as Twitter in English language news media, according to my quick search using a media monitoring tool. That's 6,303,640 words. There are fewer than 800,000 words in the King James Bible. Ernest Hemingway took only 27,000 words to win the Pulitzer Prize for The Old Man and the Sea, and the bold ambitions of the UN Charter required a mere 9,000. At a time when words matter so much, can we agree to omit these four words and devote the considerable space this will leave to something, anything else?
From Christopher Lepoc, Edmonton, Canada. I agree that you should stop using the phrase formerly known as Twitter. Much better would be X, known as Twitter to everyone, but its capricious owner.